from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us, clicking the subscribe button and telling about us to a friend, family member, or a coworker. This is episode number 31, recorded on Monday, December 29th. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen. And joining me, much like Sinatra, he also thinks it was a pretty good year, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. Yeah, it's been quite a good year and doing well. Well, it hasn't been such a good year, but since September, it's been quite a good year, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a very good year, yeah? So Sinatra was right on this front.
Yeah, at least. At least the last 4 months were really happy in the markets.
Let's put it this way, it was a very good quarter, okay?
Yeah.
Agree about that.
Quarter and change, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And this week we'll preview the main events for 2015 from across the globe, including policies of the central banks such as FOMC, Bank of England, Bank of Canada, RBA, Bank of Japan, all the big ones.
And the ECB, of course.
We'll talk about the state of oil, commodities, the developments from equities, bond markets, the main currencies, US dollar, Japanese yen. So let's kick it off with the FOMC. We have big year ahead of us, right, Yochai? We have whether or not we'll raise rates. I think the answer is pretty much yes, but we'll debate about it in a moment. And progress of the rate hike following the first one. So what are your thoughts about 2015 and the FOMC?
Yeah, well, the US dollar had quite a nice run, especially towards the end of 2014 on expectations for a rate hike. And I think indeed we'll see that in the meeting in June. In the middle of the year, that's when the Fed has a press conference. It said it won't raise rates in the next couple of meetings, couple meaning two, January and March. April has no press conference, and despite the declaration of Yellen that every meeting is a live meeting, I think this is a historic event, a rate hike after so many years after the financial crisis. I think it will happen with the press conference. June is the preferred timing. And I think that the US dollar will continue strengthening until that rate hike. Sometime afterwards, it'll begin slowing down, if not reversing its course just a bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because if we look at economics 101, if rates go up, the currency is supposed to also strengthen. So how do you figure that out?
Well, if we look at markets 101, we also have the buy the rumor, sell the fact. So I don't think it'll be a straightforward, the dollar will fall immediately after the rate hike. But I think we'll see the actual event is still historic and it'll boost the dollar even more. But eventually the path of the further rate hikes will be a bit clearer and the US economy is doing okay, but it's probably not going to sprint, run really fast. So I think if the rate hike indeed comes in June, I think that around August, September, we could see the dollar beginning to wobble around, even though the Fed, I believe, is set to continue raising rates in every meeting until the end of the year.
Oh, really? I think the last meeting would have tapered down a little bit the median outlook, right, for the Fed rate for the end of 2015.
Exactly.
According to the recent estimate, it's going to be 1.125. And we could see another decline in the coming meetings because the current expectations are, and if you look at the bond market especially, you see that the market also expects a June rate hike. The thing is that because the Fed also weighs in on the one hand whether or not raising rates will have a little bit of an adverse impact on progress, the slow progress that the US economy had, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, there's also what's the ramifications of keeping rates low. There could be maybe a bubbling up of inflation that the Fed is might be blindsided. There could be a possibility, but that's the downside for keeping rates low even in 2015. So I think they're weighing in these two options and what's the least worst of both evils, I think, in this case, will be just to keep rates low. So that's why maybe they'll raise rates and afterwards, it's maybe they'll raise rates, but then the subsequent meetings at a much slower pace than what markets currently expect. That's my guess. I think that's maybe why the Fed is so on defense, gives us drips and drabs of what's up ahead. I mean, come on, They don't paint us a very clear picture of where the rates are heading. It's the only saying, yeah, it's most likely going to raise rates in 2015, but we'll wait at least a couple of meetings and it will be data driven. And, you know, they're keeping their options open, right? It's not like they're honing down. You're silent. So you don't agree with me on that.
I think, of course, we can't know what's going to be. It's data dependent, of course. And we're now at the end of December 2014, and once they indeed raise rates, if we're correct in June, we don't have no idea how the data is going to be then and how it's going to be in the months afterwards. But I think that if we're looking at the taper process, for example, they gave the markets a long time for preparation, and once they began doing it, they continued doing it every meeting. They're also making a huge, huge preparation for raising rates, and once they begin, I think they'll raise rates consistently until the end of the year, and we'll get interest rate of about 125. So I think once they begin, they'll continue doing it. But rates won't reach high levels, and they'll need to reconsider everything this time next year.
All right, so it'll be interesting to see where this is heading. In any case, I'll also just point out that it's interesting to look at what's happening, treasury yields and the bond market in the US, because even though we see that the short-term rates are very slowly going up, at least the 1 year, the 2 year, 3 year, over the past year, they did gone up a little bit. But as you go even a little bit further to the 5 year, 7 and 10 years, I'm not even talking about the 30 years, we'll leave that aside, but the mid-range, they are continuing to slowly come down. So that's interesting to see that, even though, as I said, economics 101, if we see that current expectations are for rate hike, even the short term, it's supposed to also eventually result in a rise of the yield of the midterm and in long term yields. But we don't see that. So what's your take on it, Kai?
I think there's a lot of distortion in markets. Well, we still have a balance sheet of 4.5 trillion US dollars. We still haven't seen wage hikes. In my optimistic view, the non-farm payrolls report that we've seen for November has finally shown a first rate hike. I think that employees will get raises in early 2015, and eventually, when we'll see consistent path of wage rises, we'll also see treasury yields go higher. But yet again, the Fed still reinvests its proceeds from QE. That means it's still contributing to depressing long-term yields down. I would look more at level of core PC price index, what the Fed looks at, and shy away a bit from bond yields.
Okay. And I'll just mention just one final thought about the bonds, that one interpretation for the at least the long-term, the 20-year, the 30-year for going down, is that the FOMC earlier this year revised down their outlook for the terminal rate to 3.75, if I'm not mistaken, the median point. So that's supposed to, again, assuming rational expectations with all the asterisks that we supposed to put on after saying rational expectations, this supposed to also reduce the very long-term yields. So it could have a little bit of a understanding, but still they've gone way down, and that's an interesting development, and we'll see where they're heading in 2015. Let's turn just a quick mention for equities. If we'll see a raise rate and it will progress as you said, do you think we'll have some pushback from equities, will curb down the recent progress in 2014?
I think we'll have to see some kind of more serious correction in stock markets, but in historic levels adjusted for inflation, I don't think stock markets are that bubbly. I mean, of course, there are elevated stock valuations for some stocks, and maybe the end of QE and the beginning of rate hikes will help clean up some stocks, but I think that once the Fed does raise rates, and it's important to remember that Yellen and also Bernanke are very dovish. So once the very dovish Fed, and it's going to be even more dovish in 2015 with the new composition, once they raise rates, it means they're very, very confident that it's the right time. So all in all, I do see stock markets on average advancing just a bit more and not crashing, not doing something horrible, just perhaps small corrections. I think they'll do relatively okay.
Okay, and one thing that will enable equities to continue to progress is the oil market. So oil market has took a bit of a tumble so to speak, in the past a couple of months or so, a little bit. And now it's trading around $55. Who remembers that it was around $100 and said, yeah, I'll stay there forever, right? And, lo and behold, that's what we love about the oil market. Always there to surprise you.
Right.
And now it's $55. Some analysts even say, oh, it's going to continue to go down. One of the things is that we need to remember is when oil prices go down, it enables growth for the economy. It helps corporate. So it could have some positive impact on the progress of the U.S. economy and equities as well. Where is it heading? I think that at least for the first half of the year, we'll see probably oil prices continue to be very depressed and at the current low levels and maybe even continue to slide down. If we'll see any pushback from either OPEC members, except Saudi Arabia is pretty determined to keep oil prices down and to defend its market share. If other OPEC members will start to push back, maybe, even though I don't see how they'll do, but if there will be some pushback, we could see oil prices slowly crawling back up. Or, of course, if Saudi Arabia's recent adventures have some actual impact on oil shale, and in the U.S. Producers will start to taper down their production. What's your opinion on the oil market, Yochai?
Yeah, I think eventually it'll self-correct because there'll be less production in the U.S., more demand in the U.S., and, well, same phenomenons in other places in the world, and eventually prices will go up. I have no clue about when it's going to happen. If we talked beforehand about perhaps bubbles, I think there were bubbles in some of these shale drills, all these junk bonds, too much of the easy money from the Fed reached these kind of places. If prices remain low and even go lower and stay there for a long time, you could see it hurting the U.S. economies because of some of these jobs are also high-earning jobs. I think eventually it'll self-correct, not all the way up to 100, but somewhere around $65, $70. And that could be sort of the Goldilocks level for the U.S. economy, enough shale jobs, and enough spare cash for the U.S. consumer. That's the, of course, optimal scenario. But perhaps it still has a way to go down to 40 and create further shocks in Venezuela, Russia, and also the United States before prices go up. One thing I can say for certain is that after so many years of sort of stagnation in oil prices, we had excitement in the last quarter, and I think oil prices will be central throughout 2015, and we'll all watch it closely.
Yeah, and Russia was one of the main players of the past year that continues to heavily rely on oil, and oil alone accounts for roughly 39% of its exports, and if you include the refined products and gas, it comes to 63%. Russia could have a serious problem down the line from the perspective of on the one hand, the ruble crashing down. It's now around 55, if I'm not mistaken, 55, 56, so it's devalued by 67%, so they devalued the ruble, bears a little bit more on a imbalance trade. And on the other hand, they continue to see a lower revenue from oil. It could be an interesting see where Russia will head in 2015. You never know with oil, because last time that oil jumped way up from the low 80s and all the way up to $100 was because of Libya. And Libya is a pretty small, relatively small, not such a big player on the global arena. It was had roughly 1.6 million barrels of oil produced on a daily basis, which is account for roughly, what, 2%? Less than 2%.
Yeah, but that could be the tipping point.
Exactly. Because it doesn't need much. That's the point that everybody forgets. It doesn't need much for creating such a shock and for the markets to react so promptly to such news. And Russia, the third largest producer in the world, this is something that could be very important for the oil market. If they'll have some slowdown in production or continue or start tapering down their production because of the recent developments, who knows? It could have some progress and some impact on the oil markets. Oil could shoot right back up to $100 very easily, very promptly. So it'll probably be a very volatile year for oil, and we'll keep a close tab on it, talk about it in future episodes. So let's turn from oil in the US, let's turn to Europe and starting with the ECB. So it'll be an interesting year for ECB as well, Johan?
Yeah. Even though they cut down the number of meetings from 12 to 8, and I must say I'm personally very disappointed, I think we'll have a very exciting year in Europe and for the Euro.
You should put it on the suggestion box for Mario Draghi to read it. You can never know.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it a try. Maybe I'll fly to Frankfurt and knock on their doors and plead. Anyway, so we're going to have the next meeting. It's probably the most critical one. It's January 22nd, probably decision on quantitative easing. That's really a big thing. The ECB tried to avoid it for a very long time due to various reasons, politics, optimism, anything but inflation.
The Germans.
The Germans, basically. But
the Germans.
The Germans. But basically, it's just European economy is stuck. There's a danger of deflation. All other tools are exhausted. The TLTRO, the ABS, all the alphabet soup. They gave all the hints and preparations. And finally, in 2014, since the peak in May, we've seen the euro fall quite a lot. But I think it's not going to be the exact same story in 2015. I think we are going to see further falls in the first half. We're going to see QE. We're going to see euro-dollar fall to around 110, 115. But then eventually I think these magic tricks will work. It'll come from a weaker euro, which will help exports, will lift inflation, lower oil prices, which will eventually reach consumers, even though taxes on oil are relatively high. Also, after so many years, I think there is time for optimism and correction. So I think we'll see a tale of two halves, fall in the first half, and then a resurgence of the euro in the second half, quite a big bounce, and I think it'll pass 130 eventually, but not before falling.
There's not going to be rumors about parity. You can forget about it. That's what you're saying.
About parity? No, I think, I would also like to put the headline euro-dollar parity. It's important to remember one basic thing about Eurozone. It has a current account surplus. It's especially because of the Germans, but not also Germany exports a lot, but other countries, and the weaker euro will help it. And when the zone has a surplus, that means that only speculative money is pushing it down. So eventually the euro is bid, and once the economy begins to rise thanks to, well, a lower euro, I think the euro will also begin rising.
So wait a second, you're telling me after we got rid of the quantitative easing phrase in 2013 from the FOMC, now you're going to bring it right back up in Europe? That's what you're saying?
Yeah. Yellen moves the baton to Mario Draghi and...
Oh, man.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
He's going to use it quite hard, I think. And I think he's going to get positive results. Even just by hinting about it, we already have positive results from a weaker euro. And if it's sustained and if it falls even further, we'll have even better results.
All right. And moving from the euro, we have the UK. So we have elections. We have Bank of England also taking a step to the hawk side of the pond, if you will. Where are we going to see the British pound, man?
Well, I think... A recent GDP report was quite disappointing on the year-on-year figure. It fell below the 3% level. Chancellor George Osborne can't say anymore that they have the fastest-growing economy in the developed world. So I think it's going to be, contrary to what I said beforehand, it's going to be pushed back. We have elections in May, which are critical. It's quite a big mess with UKIP taking votes from the Conservatives, but with Labour not strong enough to win enough votes. So I think we're going to have quite a messy parliament.
But you think that Cameron will remain in office?
Well, that's a good question. Perhaps we'll have a grand coalition in the UK with Labour and Tories. I don't know. I think it's quite uncertain. Recent polls I've seen are so mixed. It's going to be a mess. The Bank of England will not want to raise rates because of some signs of slowing down and not around the elections. So I think they'll wait for the August inflation report. Elections are in May, and maybe hike the rates only in September. So I think the low point for the pound will be around the elections in May, in May-June, together with the first U.S. rate hike, and then I believe it'll rise somewhere in September. So there are a few darker clouds around the UK economy, more political uncertainty, and some kind of slowdown after a year and a half of really good growth. I think the pound can further fall before rising towards the end of the year.
All right. And let's move from Europe, the UK, let's move all the way to Australia. Its economy is mostly driven by what's going on in China, and China isn't doing so well. Do we see that RBA will take another shot at it and start reducing its rates again?
I think so. Maybe not in February in the next meeting, but I think we'll see two or three cuts throughout 2015. We have unemployment rising in Australia. We have a Chinese slowdown. You can call it soft landing, hard landing, engineered, not engineered, balanced, unbalanced. But I think it's clear that demand for Australian goods is falling. What do you think about China?
Well, China, that's interesting because we talked about it recently and we saw that the Chinese government has started to take the phone call of China slowing down maybe too hard, and they've recently made some implications, some implemented a little bit of a monetary stimulus, if you will, let's say that, they cut rates a little bit. We still didn't see any too much of a reaction. I didn't see. Did you see any some positive reaction from the recent reports? The PMI didn't rise. I didn't see anything ahead. So it will be pretty interesting to see whether or not China will take another stab at it and start cut rates and start seeing that, yeah, maybe this slowdown engineer isn't working so well for their purposes and start to reverse it. Do you think that China is actually contemplating whether or not to make this move?
I think they're making small adjustments, but the current campaign of the regime to fight corruption is quite strong. We've seen that also in Macau and curbing down on casinos, and we're seeing it in arrests of high-profile members of the Communist Party, and I think they're quite serious. So they will try to avert a big shock, and they did cut interest rates, and they did change some lending rules. They think they'll continue doing such signs, but the general direction is of rebalancing and more local consumption, and eventually I think it's good for the world, but specifically for Australia, it continues to be bad news because the economy there and the land down under hasn't diversified away from China.
Yeah, obviously they continue to rely on it, especially for all its commodities, iron ore or coal or all the major components that Australia exports to China. The current outlooks are still pretty grim, and they show at best maybe remain that these prices, these commodities will remain flat at best, and at worst they'll continue to slowly come down in 2015. So I think Australia will have to also take into account that when it comes to the main commodities that they export, will probably continue to remain, these markets will continue to be soft in 2015.
Yeah, even if oil prices rise, it doesn't mean that other commodity prices are set to rise. And another thing in that the context of Australia is that Australia does have high or elevated house prices. So far, the Reserve Bank of Australia refrained from what's called macroprudential actions. That means limiting lending rules or things like that. So that's one of the things that keeps interest rates high, because it's the main tool of curbing the housing market. Eventually, I think that Stevens from the RBA will have to take a page from Wheeler in the RBNZ from the neighbor New Zealand, and they will have to introduce some macroprudential tools and at the same time cut interest rates and try to weaken the Australian dollar. So I think we'll see throughout 2015 a weaker dollar. I think that 75 cents for Aussie dollar isn't too far down. And even if the US dollar falls against other currencies such as the euro at some point, or the pound at some point during the year, I think the Aussie will be pressured throughout the whole year.
Let's review what's heading for Japan. So, Yochai, what's your take about Japan? They had a pretty exciting year when it comes to the monetary developments, raising taxes, and then pushing it back. Will we see 2015 to be such a turbulent year for Japan and for the Japanese yen as well?
Yeah, I think we'll see a third year of action in Japan, and it could be a third year of falls for the Japanese yen. Shinzo Abe was re-elected as expected. Inflation is still weak in Japan, and we're not talking about oil prices, not talking about the impact of the tax hike, but if you look at core prices, they're too low. The BOJ is far from reaching its target. The government just announced a new stimulus plan. I think with lower oil prices, Japan can allow itself a weaker yen, and I think we'll see more falls in the yen. And now we're around 120. I think 130, 135 is not too far. Maybe if the dollar stops rising towards the end of the year, the yen could enjoy some mercy. So all in all, I think we'll see a fall in the Japanese yen throughout the year. Even if the dollar pulls back a little bit, I think it will not help the Japanese yen too much. All the stimulus, monetary and fiscal, even might, some say it might get out of control. I don't think this will happen, but I think we'll see fall to 130, 135, and perhaps the dollar yen will get stuck over there and will not make a comeback to lower levels.
Okay, and if we talked about Australia, we have to talk about Canada. They're not geographically close, but they have some similarities, especially when it comes to their reliance on commodities. So what do you think about Canada? It's not going to be a too much of a turbulence year. If we pick one of these economies that we just talked about, I think Canada will be pretty stable throughout 2015.
Yeah, it's going to be stable because, they have quite a balanced approach on everything. They rely, the economy, real economy relies more on US demand, and that has been quite strong. The currency did fall a lot because of oil prices. If, of course, oil prices fall to 40 and they stay there, the Canadian dollar will suffer another blow because it's a major export. But eventually, assuming a stabilization in oil prices, even if oil prices don't rise, the stronger demand from the United States, I think, will help push the loonie higher. If I'll make a bold prediction, let's say I think that we'll see parity back in dollar CAD towards the end of the year, yeah.
Wow, okay. I think that, yeah, the Canada will probably see some smooth sailing for the rest of the year. I think the Bank of Canada didn't do much this year and probably will keep its rates pretty stable at 1%. There are elections in the at the end of the year in October. I don't see how it will have any shock for the Canadian economy that continues to rely on the US, that keeps growing at a steady pace. From Canada, I will also review a couple of countries that are worth mentioning. One is that next year there are also going to be elections in Argentina at the end of October 25th, 2015. This time, Cristina Kirchner will step down. The Argentina economy hasn't done well, continues to stagnate and even to slow down. According to recent expectations are that the GDP will see a 1.9% contraction this year. They have higher debt, continue to have a high inflation, or roughly 20-30%, depends who you ask. That's also another action. That's an also interesting development. So we'll review Argentina, I think, in a future episode, because it's pretty interesting and have some could have some opportunities. Of course, with opportunities come also risk, but it's an interesting country to follow. And also have elections at the end of the year. Since it's you have a little bit of a insight track for Spain. Do you have any inside input on this?
Yeah, well, regarding the euro, I think it won't have a big effect, at least. Well, who knows until November. There is an interesting thing here in Spain. A new political party has emerged. It's called Podemos, which means we can. They won quite a few seats in the parliamentary elections for the European Parliament back in May. And they're becoming a major political force. They're expected to come in third after the two major parties, the controlling PP party and the opposition socialist party. So I think it'll be, of course, very interesting to watch, and eventually we'll have both mainstream parties, the center-right and center-left, form a grand coalition and try to leave this new party behind, this new anti-austerity, anti-bailout, left-wing Podemos party behind. I think the party already achieved some things in terms of fight against corruption, which is a major issue here. But all in all, I think it will not have a major impact on the euro as far as I see it now, nearly 1 year away. But of course, getting close to the event, it'll be much more interesting.
All right, and we'll conclude this tour about our preview for 2015 with another commodity, gold and silver, precious metals markets. Gold hasn't done so well in 2014. Do you want to take a guess how much it declined this year, Juan?
15%?
1%.
Just 1%?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I thought. Because when I looked at it, I thought, oh, gold probably done very poorly. But when you come to it, oh, it's only fell to 1%. Silver, on the other hand, did decline by, as you guessed, almost correctly, 16%. So I think the progress of gold is mostly driven, it depends who you ask. There are two school of thought. It'll either be a US Treasury yields, it's a, like as if it's an alternative investment. So if Treasury yields bounce back, could keep down the gold. And this year we saw that Treasury's yields, the long term at least, didn't rise, even they actually a little bit declined. The other hand, there's also the fear of inflation. And now that QE has ended, Fed is most likely to raise rates next year. So it's becoming less possible to buy into the whole, oh man, inflation is right around the corner, as if it's like a certain time release bomb or something like that. So I think we'll keep seeing gold slowly coming down. This year it didn't do much. I think the major tumble was back in 2013 after Bernanke shocked us with, not so shocked us, but still gave us the headline back in June that it'll taper down QE3 and then turned a little bit more hawkish back in 2013, June 2013. And since then, gold tumbled down, but in 2014 remained pretty flat. And I think we'll probably see gold slowly coming down, especially if the Fed will step up and start raising rates. So we'll keep a close tab on that as well. Okay, so this is our 2015 preview. Thank you as usual, Yochai.
Thank you, Lior. Wish you all a happy, successful, profitable year.
Yeah, happy new year. Let's have a good year in 2015. And thank you all for listening. And if you like our show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email, RSS, or iTunes, whatever suits you fancy. So until next week, this is Lior signing off for Yochai, saying have a great week and have a great year. Invest responsibly.
This podcast should be used for educational, research, and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. There are no guarantees expressed or implied of future positive returns in regard to the subject matter contained herein. Understand the risks inherent in investing before making the decision to invest or consult an investment professional for more information. Reasonable due diligence has been performed in regards to the information in this podcast. However, the hosts and guests of this podcast expressly disclaim any liability for accidental omissions of information or errors in fact. For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make market movers possible.